I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're traveling now to Provence. Provence. So many people have a romantic image of Provence, the south of France. I'm joined by two experts in the south of France, one an American Francophile, the other a Frenchman who's a tour guide. Steve Smith is my in-house Francophile here at where I work, and Steve and I have written our guidebook to France. And we're joined by Patrick Vidal, who is a friend of ours who has lived and worked all over France as a tour guide. Patrick, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Welcome. Bonjour.
And Steve, bonjour.
Thrilled to be here. Bonjour.
Bonjour. We're talking about Provence. And when we talk about Provence, it could be interpreted just anywhere outside of Paris, can't it?
But there's a little bit of misunderstanding for two different words. It's Provence and Provence, which writes V-I-N-C-E. And Provence is anything which is outside of France.
Ah, of I-N-C-E, Paris, Provence.
Yeah. P-R-O-V-I-N-C-E instead of Provence.
I gotcha.
Yeah. So Provence is anything which is outside of Paris. If you are Provençal, you're coming from outside Paris.
Does that mean less cultured?
For the Parisian, yeah. The Provence people, it means more space.
More space, and less culture, more
space. You know, Paris is like London in England or New York in the States. It's kind of it's a different country.
Yeah.
For the French.
And so you've got Provençal and Provence.
Yes.
Tell me the two words again.
Provençal and Provençal.
Would be of the region of Provence?
Yes.
And the region of Provence, is there a line that says this is Provence and that's not?
Officially, yes. I mean, the administration called the entire region PACA, P-A-C-A, which is Provence-Alpes-Côte d'Azur. So that means that includes Nice and the French Riviera and a little bit of the southern part of the Alps there. That's the official region.
But when we think about Provence,
we think of the western part of that, which is the region which is along the Rhône River. All the way down from Vaison-la-Romaine to Marseille, pretty much there.
Yeah, yeah. I think we split the area between Provence, which is really as east as Marseille, up to a little bit north of Avignon. And the Riviera is all that is, east of Marseille.
So when talking about the south of France, mm-hmm. are they thinking of Provence and the French Riviera, basically?
And I think all along the coast, really to Spain, the western coast, too, yeah.
Now, I think Peter Mayle has done a big deal to contribute to what Americans think of when we think of Provence mm-hmm. from his book, A Year in Provence.
Absolutely. Peter Mayle has created a big wave of people who wanted to come and buy places. And he's the first one who did this big hit into the real estate market.
So that really had a spike on the real estate market?
Absolutely, yeah. It's a big thing. Oh, yeah. English first. Peter Mayle, he's an Englishman, and the English came down there. And now the second hit has been done by the high-speed train, which is linking Paris to Avignon, to Marseille. Marseille takes 3 hours and 12 minutes.
So it's a thriving area because of many things, but those two reasons.
Absolutely, yeah.
Steve, your family has bought a countryside house in France.
Just a little bit north of there, yeah.
In
of
the Burgundy.
Mm-hmm. Southern part of Burgundy, yeah.
What's your take on the whole Peter Mayle thing and all this Year in Provence interest in America?
Well, I love his stories. I love what he says, and I've lived a lot of those stories, having restored a farmhouse, too. And anybody who has done that can relate to a lot of his stories, and they're told in a lovely way. I know at the time, I think, Patrick, there was some offense taken by locals. Having said that, I think it's interesting because I think the trendiness of Provence is gone. Mm-hmm. All right. I notice I go every year and I research hotels. Bed and breakfasts are closing. There's an overbuilding of bed and breakfasts that you saw that was, I think, a buildup of the various books that Peter Mayle wrote mm-hmm. and other things that led to such a trendiness in Provence that is now, it's a great place to go now, frankly, because two things. There was an overbuild of hotels, I think, in bed and breakfast, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So prices have stabilized and there's availability anytime, anywhere virtually.
Now, if you're looking for, I love this phrase, profound France. To mm-hmm. me, it means quintessentially French. Patrick, what does that mean to you? France profonde, what do you say?
France profonde, yeah, absolutely. That's the word there. What does it mean? That means a bit. I don't know if we can call Provence really the France profonde there. I mean, I don't think so. It's overbuilt. It's a lot of people coming down there. Yeah. As Steve said, I mean, a lot of tourism, a lot of bed and breakfast places and all that kind of things there. If you were referring to France profonde to French people, they wouldn't point out Provence.
Where would they point you?
They point out Burgundy, maybe. They point out L'Auvergne, which is the central
exactly.
region of France, kind of hilly, all volcanic mountains down there, which is very, 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 very isolated there. But Provence wouldn't come as the France profonde there.
And it's a funny thing. I wonder what you think of this, Patrick. I've asked many French people whether it's pejorative expression or not. And it's sort of half and half. Half don't take it negatively. pejoratively. Others think that it's a demeaning reference.
We come back to our province thing there.
Yes, profonde.
People who live in the province think that France profonde, they're pretty happy to be there. People who live in Paris think that's
so it's rural. It's sort of like farm life.
I think they're profoundly happy to be in profound France.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, if you get a nice situation in the French countryside, I can imagine that. When we're thinking about going to Provence, the region in the south of France that's not on the coast, or basically the Rhone River Valley, mm-hmm. I think. Steve, you take groups around. Mm-hmm. How would you prioritize if somebody has, let's say, a week to dedicate to what they've heard of as Provence? Mm-hmm. What would their priorities be?
Arles and Avignon to start with.
Arles and Avignon.
And one reason is if you travel throughout France, you have Paris and then a lot of small villages. The draw to France, I think, are the vineyards, the lovely villages and castles, and not the cities after Paris. However, Provence is the exception. You have a variety of great cities, as you know, Rick. Avignon, Arles, Aix-en-Provence, Nîmes, Marseille, etc. So I'd start with Arles and Avignon.
And then basically the Rhone Valley, right?
Yeah, and they're only half an hour apart. Easily done from one or the other. I don't think you need to sleep in both cities. Use one as the base. They're the two very different cities. I don't know what you think, Patrick, but I think they offer really a big difference.
Okay.
Yeah, they're very different cities. And the great thing about them is that Provence, when you look at it on our map or whatever, it's not that big a place. So when you stay in one of those places there, you can easily radiate around.
Mm-hmm. Now, we hear about Luberon. What is that?
Luberon is a little valley, which is east of this line, Avignon, the Rhone River. Yeah. It's a pretty secluded. It's maybe the part of Provence which is the closest to the France profonde there. Okay. It's a little bit isolated. It's a little bit mountainy, and you don't have too much that. But because of that, that became the place to buy properties, and that's where you got all the wealthy people bought big properties with swimming pools.
Wealthy Americans and Brits.
And Dutch and German and Swiss.
Okay, so that takes a toll on the profoundly Frenchness of it all, I would think.
Absolutely, yeah.
So the irony is people think this is where you go, Luberon, and everybody thought that.
That's always the way it works. I mean, anywhere in the world, when a place is renowned, suddenly it's become fashionable as the whatever country profound there,
I remember
it doesn't stay like that for a long time.
The south coast of Portugal is called the last bit of undiscovered coastline in Iberia. You know, and any place that's famous is the last bit of undiscovered coastline. It's going to be discovered.
It's not going to be like that for very long. Yeah,
well, can I finish?
Sure.
After Avignon and Arles, you asked for my favorite week.
Oh, good. Okay.
Okay, and I would go to the Luberon. And I think after that, you want Roman ruins.
Right.
Okay, you got the Pont du Gard and the Theatre Orange, which are both world-class, amazing Roman ruins. The Pont du Gard is the 2,000-year-old aqueduct that fed, 44 million gallons of water a day to the Roman city of
Nîmes. So a lot of people say some of the best Roman ruins are actually in France, in the Rhone Valley.
Exactly. And the Theatre in Orange is another great example of a classical theater for that purpose. So I have the cities, the Roman ruins, and then villages. Mm-hmm. And great villages in the Luberon. One thing about the Luberon, Patrick, that I think that makes it famous is development is controlled. Unlike the other area that I like for villages is the Col du Rhone area, the area up just north of like Chateau Neuf du Pape. I know they're not far apart. They're about an hour far. One's north of Arles or Avignon, and the other, the Luberon, is east. They're two entirely different areas, though, I think, for small village cruising and enjoying country life.
And now all this is much more accessible from Paris by TGV.
Is it ever?
How long from Paris to Avignon?
About 2 hours. 2 hours and
2 hours and 15 minutes, something like that, yeah.
Wow. Now, the region is confronted with some challenges. There's a lot of North Africans and Muslims in France. What, I think 8% of the population in general in France or so is Muslim?
Something like that, yeah.
And in the south, Marseille is very heavily...
Marseille is the gateway for the immigration in France. I mean, it's the big port where a lot of people from Northern Africa, from the former French colonies, are entering France. And in Provence, they find a place where there are a lot of seasonal jobs that the local people don't really want to bother with.
So seasonal jobs mostly being
picking
agricultural.
Fruits, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And tourism as well. I mean, there's a lot of jobs in tourism, which are just for the... I mean, it can be on the beaches, it can be on different places.
So it's an issue in the United States with immigrants coming in from south of the border who will work cheaply on the farms to pick the fruit, right?
Absolutely.
Same thing in France.
Yeah, sure.
Is it a... What are the challenges?
The challenge is that, I mean, most of the time they enter here, they don't necessarily plan to stay here, but they found out that, we can have a job and we get some families which have already been around there. So it's pretty cool to stay here. There are jobs and it's cheap to live. There are around Avignon, around Arles, around all those towns, a lot of developments down there. And they stay there. And a big problem is that one of the, you certainly have heard of this political party, the extreme right wing party from Jean-Marie Le Pen,
the National Front.
National Front there, has got this the place where he has got the more followers is down there in Provence.
Really? Because they've got 25% of Marseille is
they've got a lot of immigration.
North African.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's very linked to that.
Patrick,
yeah.
Aren't several cities with mayors from that political party as well? Or there were, I remember, and in Provence area. From the far right party.
Far right is National Front? Is it openly like tell the Moroccans to go back to, or the North Africans
but
to get out of the country?
The original idea is say we've got 6 million immigrants, we've got 3 million unemployed. Let's get rid of the immigrants and we'll have job for everybody there.
I think their slogan is France for the French, isn't it?
Yeah, priority to the French.
And that might sound fringy to us, but there's actually mayors that are from that party.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they've lost them on the last election there. But Orange, Vitrolles, and I think Carpentras, three more than 10,000 people towns there were run by the Front National for a little while.
Probably not a nice atmosphere for a Moroccan immigrant or a North African immigrant.
No, and a lot of they discovered that they created a lot of problems as well on like public library were not allowed to back certain kind of books and things like that. It went pretty far.
So we'll have to stay tuned to that. So we're talking about Provence. I'm joined by Patrick Vidal from France and Steve Smith, who co-authors my guidebook to France. We've learned that there's a big immigrant population from North Africa. We've learned there's a lot of expats from American Britain that are charmed by the cuteness of Provence. We learned that it's easy access from Paris now, 2 hours away by train. Lots of change going on in the south of France. Marseille is by far the biggest city in Provence, isn't it?
It's the second largest city in France, yeah.
All right.
A pretty large town, yeah.
And it's actually, it's not, it used to be kind of a rough and tumble town with almost a dangerous atmosphere. Now it's coming in its own, isn't it?
It's changing. It's very much changing. I mean, when you exit at the train station in Saint-Charles there and we go down to the port down there, you don't feel that much the old atmosphere of the town there. It's very clean, much cleaner. Let's put it like that. It's much cleaner, much straighter. It's been rebuilt, and there's a lot of things which are not as scary as it used to be.
You take a left-hand turn about halfway to the port, and you find yourself in Algeria.
It doesn't take long, yeah, that's for sure.
And it feels like. Is it Algeria, or where are the people from?
Algeria, Morocco, Tunisia.
North Africa.
And also former French colonies, down more down south. I mean, like Ivory Coast. Like
okay, Ghana, so this is the gateway to the French colonial heritage, basically,
absolutely, yeah.
In Africa.
Yes.
Now, we were talking about this, larger than ever, Arab presence and Muslim presence in France. We've seen the headlines in Paris with the burning cars and the problems, and we've talked about Marseille, but the traveler doesn't really come across that very much, do they?
No. I mean, that's what I worry about sometimes when we talk about that. In fact, you have to go to Marseille to really feel it or to observe it. Otherwise, in Arles-Avignon and the villages of the Luberon and the Côte du Rhône, Roman ruins, etc., you won't notice it very much, except at the open markets. And I mean, I think that's also one of the brilliant aspects of Provence. It's the crossroads of Italy to Spain, east to west, that is, north to south, down the Rhône Valley, as well as with the proximity. I think you're closer in Arles to North Africa than you are to Paris.
Yeah, and on top of that, there's the open markets and the restaurants, because you've got the best couscous restaurants in France.
And you say that you bring that up as if you like it. It's a plus.
Oh, I love the couscous. Yeah, it's very, very, it's very fashionable with the French at the moment.
You're absolutely right. I mean, this is the one part of France where you actually get spice in your cuisine. And, I mean, more than that, spice in the life on the streets as well. So it's a good thing. I think it is.
And this is important to keep clear. We look at burning cars in Paris. Well, that's an economic problem. But you look at the multi-ethnicity of Arles on market day.
That's what I mean. Exactly. And going to Marseille is an amazing place. I agree. And there's almost no site. There's not virtually any site worth walking into in Marseille, the second largest city of France, with no museum or, I mean, there's the Notre Dame de la Garde. Church is beautiful. But in terms of museums or site, it's the city. That's the site. And one of the reasons the city is so interesting is its setting on that beautiful harbor, much like Naples is in southern Italy. And I think this mix of ethnic cultures. I love it. And you won't find it anywhere else really in France but there.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking about Provence today in the south of France. I'm joined by Patrick Vidal and Steve Smith. And we have Tom on the line in Newport Beach, California. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Rick.
Thanks for the call. What do you have in mind?
I had a question about the Provence area. I'd love to go visit and possibly combine it, a two-week trip in Burgundy. But would you say 1 week is enough for running around Provence and getting the food and architecture and maybe some wine time in? And what sort of base camp cities you want to be savvy Rick travelers like yourself.
Steve Smith's the expert in that regard.
Well, I like a week, Tom. In a base, Arles-Avignon to start with, but I'd also want to sleep overnight in one of the villages. So I do, with a week, I'd even do maybe 8 nights for a decent start in Provence. If you have 2 weeks between there and Burgundy, you know, it's straight north to Burgundy from there with a great stop in Lyon partway that you might want to consider for just a real great urban fix. And then 5 days, something like that in Burgundy, where Patrick and I used to live just down the road from each other.
Oh, great.
So you would have your time in, I think, I like Arles better than Avignon, but either town is a fine home base.
Yeah, I
agree. Wonderful sights in Arles, great market. Then you have your chance to get up into the Côte du Rhône wine region.
Well, here's what I do. Thanks, Rick. Don't rent a car for the first 3 or 4 days. Base in Arles or Avignon. I agree with Rick. Arles is better. And then rent a car for 3 or 4 days. And base out of either Vaison-la-Romaine, or there's several others that work as beautiful little village bases to experience that side of Provence. And then you can either drive to Burgundy or drop the car and take the train up there.
Up to Burgundy. And as Steve mentioned, Lyon is kind of in Burgundy and kind of in Provence. Is that right? Lyon is
nowhere in France.
You're right. It's nowhere.
If you read a guidebook in France, it doesn't talk about Lyon in any of the region. It's on its own there.
Really?
It's not part of the Alps. It's not part of Burgundy. It's not part of Beaujolais. It's not part of Provence. And that makes it so out of the track.
I mean, it's a great city. I love Lyon.
It's the most backdoor city you can think of in France.
You don't see any Americans there.
You don't see many tourists there.
And they've got this wonderful cuisine.
Absolutely.
And they are the leader in European for lighting cities at night.
The lights in the city are amazing.
They have conventions there. City designers from all over Europe come
absolutely
there.
They've got a big, I think it's the 8th of December, something like that. The beginning of December, they've got this big night where they really light up absolutely everything in the town. It's unbelievable.
I was thinking back to Tom's trip. A beautiful two-week trip would be roughly a week in Provence, a night or two in Lyon, which is really halfway. I always think of Lyon as the border between Provence and Burgundy.
Uh-huh.
Close enough. A night or even a full day, but a night in Lyon so you can eat out. I mean, that's the name of the game in Lyon. People talk about their chefs like they're great athletes, and that's the talk of the town. No matter what's going on, is the best restaurant to go to now.
And you don't need to go broke by eating in a fine restaurant in Lyon.
You saw that recently on your trip, I know, Rick. It's remarkable. It works for everybody. And then the rest of your trip in and around the Beaune area, I think, of Burgundy is a great 2 weeks.
Lyon would be like the culinary capital. I know Burgundy is one of the food capitals of the world, perhaps, the Meccas, as it were.
Very nice. Good luck on your trip, Tom.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the input.
You bet.
Thanks.
And Judy's on the phone in Seattle. Judy, thanks for your call.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Well, my husband and I are planning a trip, and we'll have about 8-9 days that we were going to try to split between Burgundy and Provence and the Riviera. I've been listening to your call, so you sort of answered some of it already, but if you have any suggestions.
Well, that's interesting. We're seeing a trend here. People are enjoying the French countryside, Burgundy, Provence, Riviera. It makes a lot of sense.
Makes a lot of sense, yeah. I mean, it's the same area. I mean, it's easy to drive or to take a train from one to the other one. It makes sense.
I would recommend you not to underestimate the convenience of the Nice airport.
Absolutely.
I love that airport.
It's called the Côte d'Azur airport, right?
We're going to leave from Nice, so we're going to end up in Nice.
Fly into Paris, from Nice.
The airport's in a landfill on the water, so you actually fly out of the Mediterranean, and the view is remarkable. But what I like about her trip, Rick, and reminds me when I meet our readers more and more, they're focusing on areas. And I think that's great. 2 weeks in those areas and such diversity, rather than really whirlwind trips of 2 weeks. You could try to explore all of France. You really couldn't have one night in each region. Otherwise, focusing on Burgundy, Provence, and the Riviera in 2 weeks, brilliant.
France is so diverse, and we're talking about Provence, and I want to talk about some of the ways that Provence is distinctive. We've talked about Roman ruins. I've heard scholars argue the best Roman ruins in Europe are in France, in the south of France, on the Rhone Valley. Makes sense. I would not argue with that. Town markets, know what day the market is. Each town has a colorful market. I think Arles is famous. Isn't that one of the best?
It is one of the best, yeah. Two days, Wednesday and Saturday. Yeah.
So plan, get your guidebook and plan what day you're going to be at the market. Something great about Provence is bullfights. They have bullfights and they don't kill the bull.
They don't kill the bull on all of them, but they do the bullfights on which they kill the bull as well.
Do they?
Yeah, but it's pretty rare now. I think it's really pretty rare.
Six times a year in all, something like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You got a season's ticket?
You can have a season ticket if you want to, yeah.
Tell us about the Provençal bullfight, the ones that I've seen where they don't kill a bull.
What they do is that they more play with the cows or the bulls. That depends which one they're doing there. There's got a proper championship around that there. And it's a very, very serious matter there. And people who are coming to watch them know all the rules and know the game is to be in front of the bull and to avoid to be touched by the bull, basically. You jump, you run around, you
so this
you
is just a daredevil thing for
you. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. But with a lot of code. It's not just like being in front of it and running around. It's a certain jump give you a certain amount of points, and certain avoiding thing give you a certain amount of points. It's right? It's
now
big.
The boys have the little hook on their hand, right?
Yes.
Explain what's going on there.
The idea is, depending on which game it is there, sometimes you have to take something out of the horn of the ball there. So it's a little circle, little ring type of thing there. Or sometimes you've got to put it on, which is even more difficult. So
that's more. I'd rather take it off than put it on.
Yeah, I agree with this one. Yes.
So these are pretty energetic bulls. In Spain, they wear the bulls down. They've drilled them with holes. They're dripping blood. In France, these bulls are ready to run.
Oui, in that kind of case, there's no of this preparation like the picadors and all those kind of things there. No, it's
a fresh bull.
They're fresh out
and
there.
He can run faster than you can.
Pretty much, yeah.
I think the thing you haven't mentioned, too, is in Arles, the bullfights take place in the Roman arena. So you get two for the price of one. And for most Americans, it really is the exception. I was just there and talking to the tourist office. You won't probably run into one of these serious bullfights. And you can go with an open conscience and just enjoy.
You mean a bullfight where they kill the bull?
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
I will say, though, that bull as meat is brilliant. Tender with the rice from the area is a great dish that you can't miss if you go.
In France.
Whether or not you see the bullfight or not.
In Arles, yeah.
You won't get that in Burgundy.
No.
You won't get that in Normandy or Brittany. You have to go to Provence for that.
A cuisine specialty, Provence.
Absolutely, yeah.
Bull.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Bull Provençal.
It's called taureau. So it's either written the Spanish way, T-O-R-O, or the French way, T-A-U-R-E-A-U there. But it's you find it on the... on the menu there, it's either a dob, which is a stew, or a steak there of taureau.
Steak or bull stew. Well, speaking of cuisine, what else would be on our checklist when we go to Provence for good cuisine?
By the way, let's stay in Arles. And what you've got around Arles is the region underneath Arles is Marchland region, which has got a lot of rice.
The Camargue.
The Camargue, yeah.
The Delta.
That's the Delta. Yeah, absolutely. That's the two arms of the Rhone River, which are finishing in the Med. And that's the only region in France where you grow rice. So anything which is going to be called Camarguez or Camargue style would be with rice.
It's also where the bulls are raised.
Absolutely.
It might appear on your dinner plate that night.
And when you see the word Provençal on a menu, what does that mean?
It's going to be with black olives. It's going to be with tomatoes. It could be with pesto. It could be with all those herbs from Provence. You've got to think of Provence as a Mediterranean region there. The diet down there is Mediterranean. It's not French. It's very, very different from anywhere else in France.
That's a huge distinction. We got Barry on the phone from Portland, Oregon. Hi, Barry.
Hey, Rick, how you been?
Good. You been thinking about eating in south of France?
Always.
Tell us what's on your mind, Barry.
Well, you know, the most important line to learn in en français when traveling in Provence or anywhere in France is a simple line. Je voudrais une chambre pour le bain. Because if you don't have a room with a bath, you're in the dark ages.
Say this again. Say it again.
Je voudrais une chambre pour le bain.
I think we can understand that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty basic.
You know, Barry, it's interesting. I mean, I go every year and I look at rooms, and I almost can't find rooms anymore without private bathroom, and I think that's what you're getting at. And it really is hard now, having done this for 20 years.
Is that right?
It is. It's almost depressing because I used to love to find that bathroom.
Well, everybody wants to spend $30 more a night to get a room and have private facilities.
Even bed and breakfasts.
Yep.
Yeah, that's true. And, of course, you know, you were speaking of the cuisine in Lyon. Of course, we all know Paul Bocuse, the world-famous chef.
Very
from
good.
Lyon.
He's
very
the guy
good.
Who does North, South, East, and
the
West.
The four reasonably priced cafe restaurants. Yeah, that's right.
That is great. I
Why
ate at two of his restaurants, and I couldn't believe the quality and the fun and the price. Well, this guy is a phenom, this chef.
Oh, it's phenomenal.
So when you go to Lyon, there's four restaurants. One's called North, one's South, one's East, one's West, all with the same chef, and apparently featuring cuisine from those parts of France.
And those names would be spelled in French, of course, too.
North,
South, East, and West.
The North Diner.
And it's also, by the way, I think, Patrick, it's also a trend in other cities, too, where famous chefs open a less expensive option to their very famous restaurants.
Oh, does he have a more – I would assume he's got a fancier restaurant.
Paul Bocuse?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. A little bit north of Lyon
just
there.
Just a little bit more expensive.
You wouldn't talk about it with a big smile on your face.
These were my kind of restaurants. They were accessible restaurants. Right. I didn't feel like a buffoon. I could have a great meal for $30.
No. Every chef in France, every big chef in France, have realized that it's all very well to be a 3-star Michelin thing there, but your custom is very limited there.
So if you're going to make some serious money, you want to be accessible to the normal people.
In fact, it just happened in Burgundy. I don't even, in Beaune, I don't know if you know it, Patrick. La Meloise, Hotel La Poste just did a restaurant in Beaune. That's a cheap cafe.
This is a good thing, and that's something to celebrate. Barry, what's your favorite wine or eating tip for Provence?
Well, in Provence, always order the wine of the region.
And what would that be?
Whatever they're serving that day, wherever you are.
Because I get all turned on when I just think about the name Bondol. For me, it's a great wine. Or Medoc. Is that Provence?
Well,
no, it's Bordeaux.
It's Bordeaux?
That's Bordeaux.
Okay, so what is your wine that you like
in Bordeaux? Basically, I would suggest you order whatever. If you are in the French countryside in Provence, whatever they're serving as their table wine, where normally I would reject that wine in other countries because it's usually of a lesser quality, but in Provence, it is of excellent quality.
I actually think he's right, but that applies to throughout France, too. I think the Vin du Pays or Vin de Table, Patrick, is going to be a local wine.
But what
from
if you want more of a complex wine with a good finish or whatever you call it? Don't you get a lot more when you spend $30 instead of $15 for a...
Well, then you would go up to Burgundy.
No. You can... The Côte du Rhône wines, I mean...
They are exceptional wines in Côte du Rhône as well.
And they're reasonably priced. I think Provence is a place to go. I wonder if you agree, Patrick. If you're going to blow a little bit on wine, the value for the money spent, I think, is exceptional.
Yes,
in Provence. In Provence.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
The dollar value is definitely there.
Now, Steve taught me that rosés are actually good. And, living in the United States, people don't respect rosés that much, do they?
No, I mean, I think that's always a discovery for Americans. I think it's changing a little bit. But the reason, rosé is great in hot, sunny weather. I would never drink it in the winter. And there's a line where you have to be drinking, seeing the Mediterranean to drink rosé, which means you're in the south of France under a shady tree.
You got to be seeing the Mediterranean to drink rosé. I love that.
See, most people do not understand that a rosé is actually a winemaker's failure. And what I mean by that is it's his failure to develop a full-body wine. And that's why it got labeled rosé, because of the color.
I think we can argue this one. I'm not 100% sure about that. I mean, I've deal with a lot of winemakers, and some of them do their rosé as they really want to do rosé, and that's a choice. And a lot of people do like rosé and enjoy
it. And the winemakers present it with pride.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right. Hey, Barry, we've got to run, but thanks for your call.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you. One other, while we're talking drinks, pastis, right?
Pastis, yeah, it's a big thing about Provence as well. Yeah,
now, that's very Provençal. How can we enjoy that when we travel there?
How can you enjoy it? I mean, the pastis is, first of all, is a licorice drink. It's a kind of if you're familiar with Greece, ouzo type drink there.
So it has
very close to that.
Anise, is that right?
Anise. The way you drink it is a tiny bit, it's 1 for 7, basically.
1 for 7.
What's that mean? So one part of pastis, 7 parts of water.
I drink it.
A lot of ice.
I drink it at 1 o'clock, 4 o'clock, and 7 o'clock.
That's a good answer to that.
One part water, 7 parts.
One part drink, 7 part water. There, around that, it doesn't matter if it's not exactly that. Basically, it's a long drink.
That you do get it, and you add your own water.
Absolutely, they never serve the water for you.
To your taste.
To your taste. So it will come with just the drink itself. A lot of ice. That's going to be the only drink in France you're going to find with reasonable amount of ice.
And this is part of the rhythm of life, isn't it? You have a break for a pastis?
Absolutely. I mean, it goes with when you play the pétanque and when you play
you
the...
You beat me to my punch there. Yeah. That's a requirement for playing pétanque. You have to come with your pastis.
We're talking pastis. We're talking pétanque. We're talking Provence. Diane's on the phone in Mustang, Oklahoma. Hi, Diane.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Mustang, Oklahoma. Doesn't sound very French to me.
It's small. We're right outside Oklahoma City.
And I hope you're enjoying our conversation. What do you have in mind?
I had in mind my experiences from 4 years ago in Paris. I diligently practiced my French before I went, and it seemed as though everyone there pretty much greeted us in English, even if I attempted to speak French. I don't think I'm that bad. And we were trying to blend in more. I'm kind of curious if once we get away from the city and get to the south of France in our next visit, that we might be able to speak a little more French and not be recognized immediately as Americans.
So your situation is, much as you try to speak French, the French speak English back at you.
Yes.
That's a different twist on the problem, isn't it?
Yeah, for years the foreigners have been complaining because the French were not speaking any foreign language, and now we're complaining because we're talking too much English.
And it's Paris. She's right. I think you're going to find people who are trying to go out of their way to speak English to you. I think one of the laws or unwritten laws is that a hotel of 2 stars or more has to have an English-speaking receptionist.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big program. Now, go to the countryside, the province, anywhere outside of Paris, and you're going to have a totally different experience, really. Now, the big cities, Nice, no, it'll be kind of like Paris, I think you'll find. But otherwise, you will have to use your French and get to use your French.
I will look forward to that.
And if you're in Provence, you have to speak it with a twang, too.
I don't know if I can manage the dialect.
Diane,
lucky not to sound American.
I'm sure it's appreciated by the French that you try the language, and I think that they're just probably trying to help out by speaking English if they're able. But regardless of how you may be new at French or struggling with your French, it is critical, more in France than any other country in Europe, I think, to know the polite words and use them.
Absolutely.
Patrick, when you come into a shop, what do you do?
Oh, it takes more. When I go to my favorite bakery, it takes more time to get out of the bakery than to buy the bread itself. I mean, by the time you say that, oh, your kids are doing, and see you next week, and I'm glad you gave me this marvelous bread there.
But a traveler can get into this. That's what I love about it. If you just say bonjour, monsieur, or bonjour, madame, man or woman, and utter it even quietly under your breath, just go into a shop. It still happens today. I love that, Patrick, about your country. People acknowledge the entrance in a shop of a new customer, whether they're American or French or from wherever.
And a tourist can be very confident stepping into any shop, and it's actually really expected, I think, that when somebody steps in, they say, bonjour, monsieur.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And when you leave,
absolutely.
Au revoir, madame. Exactly.
Yeah, that's fundamental. That's the formality of the French language, and you can't live without that. It just doesn't work.
All right, Diane. Well, good luck on your next travels to France.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Bye now. CP is on the phone in Delhi, New York. Hi, CP.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thanks for your call.
Yes.
What's on your mind?
One of the favorite things that we like to do in Provence is go to the market day in each village, and you can find the most amazing local goods. And we always like to pick up a picnic while we were there and go out and eat it afterwards. And we one time bought some bread and some sausage and a nice big piece of Pont-l'Evêque cheese. But unfortunately, the cheese was a little bit past its prime, I think, and we ate it, but we really couldn't eat a lot of it. And then we decided to pack it in the trunk of the car to kind of keep the smell.
Everybody's done this once in their travel life.
Yeah. And then we went to stay at a little maisonette.
Pont-l'Evêque, of all cheeses.
Yeah.
Went to stay at a little maisonette that had a little private kitchen. And we quickly put the cheese in the refrigerator just to keep the smell down. Came in the next day from touring around, and Madame had taken the cheese out of the refrigerator and written us a little note. And so, no, you never put the cheese in the refrigerator. But, of course, we couldn't live in the same house with that cheese. So we kept putting it back in the refrigerator. But the funny thing is that we had a little mouse in the bathroom. And every day we would see where he had eaten a little bit of the bar of soap. But he never once went in there and ate that cheese.
Stupid little critter.
Our memory of France.
That was not a French mouse.
That was not a French mouse. No. That was a tourist mouse.
Yes, absolutely.
I do, though, think that a highlight of Provence has got to be the markets. I think even for a French person, and they are nowhere better on display. The combination of fresh produce, right, Patrick, meats, cheeses, baskets, flowers, etc., than on these normally weekly markets.
And you meet these guys that are evangelical about their cheese.
And she's so right. Pick up a picnic. You have to stop at 10 places. It's got to be a requirement. Fill your basket. Buy the basket. Buy one of these paniers or a basket, first of all. And go to perfect hilltown perch for a great
Provence
picnic.
Is one of the gardens of France. I mean, he's got fruits, he's got vegetables, he's got a lot of things growing around the Rhone River. There's a lot of things growing down there.
Is Pont-l'Evêque Provençal cheese?
No, Pont-l'Evêque comes from Normandy.
Normandy, yeah.
They would have had to drive all the way back to Normandy to take it back to Normandy.
In a stinky car.
That was her first mistake, buying a Norman cheese in Provence. Yeah.
I didn't know any better.
Hey, I'll buy Pont-l'Evêque anywhere in France. That's one of my favorite cheeses.
It is good. It's a great cheese anywhere.
CP, thanks for your story.
You're so welcome. Enjoyed talking to you. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Lindsay from Seattle emailed us, and she writes, I'm curious to know if there are places where a visitor could not only watch the locals play petanque, but could also take some lessons and even play a game or two.
Oh, I got it for you.
What's
this
that?
Is unbelievable. The tourist office in Vence, which is really the Riviera, but not far away from this eastern limit of Provence.
So Vence is just outside of Nice.
Yeah, it's a hill town, 20 minutes, would you say, above Nice, 25 minutes above Nice. And there's a beautiful petanque court right in front of the tourist office in the big main square of the town of Vence, Vence. And they rent or they give away petanque balls and lessons on certain nights of the week for how to play petanque.
I mean, you can learn to play petanque in 10 minutes, can't you, with instructions?
Yeah, 10 minutes is a bit long even. I mean, it's a very, very simple.
And I mean, I suppose there's techniques,
yeah,
but the rules.
The rules themselves are the simplest thing you can think of. I mean, it's
and
very, very
I mean, in Nice, I rent a bike and drive along. There's a wonderful bike path along the coast out to the airport. And just before that, there's a whole bunch of courts just spread out. And it's so much fun watching. You can get yourself invited into a game.
Oh, absolutely. Every little village will have this little field around next to the town hall, next to the post office, next to the center of town. There will be a little field where people are playing on Sundays.
Is this where men go to escape the house?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. That's a good idea, no?
Steve, petanque is very popular. Explain it in a nutshell. What is petanque?
Well, it's we might say lawn bowling, but it's played on a dirt sort of gravelly surface in France with these heavy metal balls about the size of baseballs that you lob out. First of all, you lob a target ball the size of a ping pong ball out there, and it's usually a different color. And then you play in teams, commonly, or one versus another. And then you try to lob your ball closer to that target ball and or knock the other ball away.
So it's kind of like almost like horseshoes.
Horseshoes with balls. Very good.
Yeah. All right. And it's a national pastime in France.
Oh, it's a big thing. And Provence is definitely the place where people play the most, the pétanque there.
What I'd love to recommend to people traveling with families in particular, buy a set of pétanque boules and get the real ones, the heavy ones, if you have kids in particular on your trip, and join, go local, because you can usually not find them just there available for you. But what a fun way. And I've done this in many cases just with one friend or two, and the locals playing are always very respectful. Watch first, you know, avoid their paths, their little courses. And then what a great souvenir you have when you get home, and you can use them at home too.
And what a great way to get the locals to respect you. Yeah. You're an American family pulls into town, and you've set out your petanque balls.
You know, my son's 15, and it's his favorite thing to do is to break out the petanque balls when we're traveling around France.
No, and you will meet people. I mean, if you go in the field in Arles next to the Place Lamartine in Arles, there's a big field where a lot of people are playing there. And if you start playing around there, there'll be people coming around and looking at your game and saying, listening that you're not speaking French and saying, oh, no, you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to do that or whatever. And you'll meet people. That's for sure. That's a very, very, very guaranteed way of meeting people. It's a very social game.
Right there. That's reason enough to get some petanque balls
Absolutely.
And play. Or go out there and watch people play. I've had people help me, instruct me, and try to teach me to do it right and so on. Is there actually serious leagues in like a France champion petanque?
There's a world championship.
No.
Hey, you've got World Series in the States, so we've got World Championship. We've got...
They must be incredibly good.
They're very good, yeah. I mean, they're coming from all over the world, if I may say. I mean, it's kind of... Spain plays quite a lot the same game. Argentina, there's a few countries
That's
around
right,
the world.
There's different words for it, isn't there? What's another word for
bocce? It's a slightly different game,
bocce,
but
it's
the same principle.
It's a bit different. It's not the petanque itself.
We have an email from Jeff in Irvine, California. Jeff writes, "We enjoyed a wonderful four-week home exchange in La Drôme, Provençal, two summers ago. We lived in a small village just west of Nyon, the olive capital of France. This delightful region just north of Vaison-la-Romaine has easy access to most of Provence and are your recommended sites and activities, not trampled with tourists." So here's a man who's done a home exchange, setting up in one small town, and using that as a base. Tell me more about home
exchange.
Well,
I love where he chose.
Is that right?
I mean, I really do. And
You could understand with my pronunciation.
Yeah, it's Nyons. They pronounce that last S. You never know if they do. And it is, it's a gorgeous, I agree with him. The Drôme Provençal is less explored, less known, and a lovely place to set up. And if I understand it, this is something, Patrick, you wouldn't know so much. There are organizations set up to facilitate the exchange of homes, and particularly between Frenchmen and Americans. It's very common.
It's a trend which is becoming big in France. Came out
house swapping.
In France. Yeah, house swapping, yeah.
Between French people or intended to be between different nations?
Oh, I mean, pretty much it's for people who want to go away and not have the expense of buying another house somewhere
house swapping,
or renting
sure.
a house
yeah.
somewhere.
Well, there's an organization called Servas, Servas, mm-hmm. that is very popular for this reason.
I mean, it's been around the world for a very long time, but the French have been entering into it, I would say 5 years, something like 5-10 years, something like that. And it's becoming very big. And French people do travel around the world just like that, just swapping houses. And it's becoming more and more important.
A lot of people, when they think about Provence, they're thinking of Van Gogh. Van Gogh lived in Provence, painted most of his art in Provence, I think.
Yeah, I think in 15 or 18 months, he painted more than 300 paintings or something like that. Yeah, he did a lot of his work down there. And certainly some of the most known one, apart from the last few ones in Auvers-sur-Oise.
All those sunflowers
were
Provençal
absolutely,
sunflowers.
Yeah. The disappointing thing is that there's no one painting of Van Gogh in Provence, or very, very few there. So you go to Arles, for instance, where he lived for a very long time, and There's no painting of Van Gogh down there.
What they've organized in a few places is walking on the footsteps of Van Gogh. And it is, the paintings, Patrick, I think it was 18 months and hundreds of paintings. Yeah. So he was prolific in this time. But you can still follow the tracks and stand where he stood to see like Starry Night over the Rhone River or, you know, or Café de la Nuit in Arles.
Well, they have plaques in Arles that show the painting. And you can look at the painting and see the site.
The tourism office got a little leaflet that you can buy for €1 or something like that. And you walk in the steps of Van Gogh all over town.
And that, I actually think that's really cool. They've actually augmented it in Saint-Rémy, just out Saint-Rémy outside of Arles, to where they put these big tableaus or paintings up. You were looking at this wall-sized painting, the original would be in Paris or somewhere else, with the view right there standing where he painted it from.
But if you want to see Van Gogh, you got to go to the Orsay Gallery in Paris or the Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam or the Arnhem Museum outside of Amsterdam.
I
think that's where the most famous Van Goghs are.
Absolutely. The only link you got with Van Gogh still in, apart from the places where he painted there, there are two places where they reset his bedrooms there.
Right,
there's one which is very legitimate in Saint-Rémy because it's in a place where he was taken care of in the hospital there. And it's a little visit. It's a very tucked out visit out of Saint-Rémy. Huh. It's a very good visit there. There is one that he just built in Arles there, next to the arena there, and it's a pure tourist trap. It's not very interesting.
You've got to be careful of Van Gogh tourist traps.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're
very good at that. Yeah.
But there is one museum facing the arena in Arles that is art inspired by Van Gogh, and I find it very interesting. And
yeah, I completely agree with you. I think that's terrific.
What's it's called? The
Fondation. Foundation Van Gogh.
Van Gogh.
Right. The way it works is they've got temporary exhibits. So you can be there when they do a lot of things around, some painters painting in the style of Van Gogh or things like that, or you can be there when there's something which has not much to do with Van Gogh sometimes as well. So.
Jan in Walnut Creek, California. Thanks for your call.
Oh, hi, Rick. This is Janice. I was in Provence this summer, and I discovered some wonderful things that actually weren't in your book. And so I wondered if there were other things that aren't in your book that maybe you could tell us about. One that I did see was the Museum of Soliedo in Tarascon, and the other was the windmills just outside of Arles. And I just wondered if there are any other attractions like this that may not be in your book that we shouldn't miss.
I'll let Steve answer that because Steve has written most of that Rick Steves guidebook to Provence. And we have a page limit, and we know that Americans have a short vacation time, and we try to be selective.
Yeah.
We try to cut through a lot of the sites and just list what we think are the best use of your time, but that's certainly not the same for everybody. What do you think, Steve?
Well, and Patrick, you can speak to this too. Excuse me. When I go through, I have to ferret through what's interesting to an American and concentrate more pages on fewer sites and provide more in-depth information. And I know the museum in Tarascon with the fabric, the Soliedo, which is very interesting, as well as I think it's the Moulin de Daudet.
In Fontvieille.
I had a Frenchman take me to that was near and dear to his heart, but it always struck me as a site that was very important to French people, but that Americans wouldn't find as interesting because who knows Daudet, who is an American? I mean, a little windmill is kind of interesting.
Well, I can go even a little bit further on this one. Daudet never wrote anything from the Moulin itself.
Right.
And then we have to make a call. Sometimes I think the Camargue is very famous and it's quite intriguing to a lot of people, but Steve and I just think it's a little overrated.
But I will say, a fair answer to her is that there are lots of sites that I wish I could get in the book that I'm limited by pages. One great one, I think, Patrick, you know this place, that's not in the book that you might consider is the Chateau de Grignan, Grignan, just north of Nyons in the northern part of Provence. I think it's a very interesting place.
Yeah, it's a very, very nice place. They've got a very interesting festival once a year about books and letters because it was the property of Madame de Sévigné, which was a very, very famous writer in the 18th century.
Does that help you, Jan?
Yes, it does very much.
Good luck in your future travels.
Oh, thank you very much.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye now.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. I've been joined by Patrick Vidal and Steve Smith. We're talking about Provence. You guys, if you were to sum up one image of Provence, we've had so many in this last hour. Let's say you're going to write a guidebook to Provence. What image would you put on the cover?
I wouldn't need an image. I would need some sound. I like the wind and the cicadas. That's the big image of Provence there, the cicadas going...
Or the crickets.
Provence. The crickets, yeah, absolutely. When a French person does make a movie about Provence, you don't need an image. You put the sound. You put... And everybody says, oh, it's in Provence.
So
that's the way it works.
So you said the sun?
The wind. Yeah, the wind.
And the sound of the crickets.
And the sound of the cricket, yeah.
He's so right. I mean, it is a lot about the sounds. But the image that I would take home would be with a hill town perched on the top of a beautiful vineyard with all that wind and noise and sound going on.
What sound does a cricket make? Wow. Those are the images of Provence in the south of France. Thanks very much.
Rick Steves has spent a third of his adult life in Europe, researching and writing guidebooks. His now classic Europe Through the Back Door teaches the skills of smart travel. At Rick Steves' online travel store, you'll also find guidebooks for France, Paris, Provence, the Riviera, and Rick's French Phrasebook. To learn more about Rick's guidebooks for France and beyond, visit the travel store at ricksteves.com.